7 o'clock, listening to the morning review. First, let's go to Aiden in Somerset West. You have an urgent traffic advisory. What do you see on the roads, Aiden?
We've got the truck has ridden, pulled over the overhead cables across the road. It's lying in the road. And if the people can just make another plan, it's from between Somerset West and Solaris Pass. If they can just make another plan, because they're riding over the cables, I'm scared it's going to flip and short out.
Okay, thanks so much for that, Aiden. Really appreciate it. Waleed, Amy, let's get, see if we can get someone from Western Cape Traffic to see if we can get just some details on that, or Zane Johnson as well. But 22 minutes to 11 o'clock, you are listening to the Morning Review. Now, last week on air on the Morning Review, the City of Cape Town told us they will no longer be installing water management devices from the 1st of July in 2021. It's part of the city's revised water tariff approach. For the last 15 years, it has been a bone of contention in Cape Town. The use of the drip system. If people aren't able to pay, they don't pay their bills, a water management device is installed. And this only allows a trickle through for people to at least get basic water every day. Now, water scientists, lobby groups say the municipality should not be using these punitive measures to manage water usage. They say that this infringes on people's basic right to access to clean water. Now, Xanthia Limburg was on our show last week saying that the limit that indigent properties will be allowed has been increased to from about 10,000 litres to 15,000 litres a month. This still only, you know, translates to about 500 litres a day. How much do you use a day? Is 500 litres enough? Joining me now, Soraya Sheba is a lecturer at the Department of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at UCT. A normal household or average household of, let's say, three or four people would say, oh, 500 litres is enough to get through our basic needs for a day. But if you're looking at particularly poorer communities where you have one property and you have a main house and you have three, four, maybe even five backyard dwellings in there, 500 litres a day is definitely not enough to meet the basic need. Soraya?
Hi, Lester. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. So, yes, exactly. Completely agree. And that's really at the heart of our critique of what the city is proposing. So, as you say, it's a revised domestic metering approach. And what is being argued by the city is that they are phasing out water management devices, which have been used for the last 15 years, and it's well documented that these are regressive. And the response or the alternative being offered is to set these to open flow, but that people have to then self-manage or to use 15 kiloliters. And if they fail to do so over a period of 3 months, they will be placed on a trickle flow where water is literally trickling out of the tap, with 6 kiloliters, 16,000 liters per household per month for 12 months. And then the same process will be repeated. Mm. But what we are arguing is that at the heart of this proposal, of this approach, is a denial of household sizes and how we conceive of a household. Alongside issue around water access, we have a deepening housing crisis in the city. Mm. And the ways in which households are responding, the way people in the city are responding, is to self-provide housing. Mm. Either household sizes are growing, dramatically large household sizes, and alongside that, backyarding is a growing phenomenon as a solution to a housing crisis. And this proposal of 15 kiloliters per household fails to recognize that on a single plot, you have multiple households. Mm.
How do we balance the need to develop a culture of payment, not only in Cape Town, but around the country, but also the realization that there is deep poverty and that you are more likely to buy a loaf of bread every day for your family to eat than, you know, keep up to date with rates and taxes? How do we then share that balance of the duty and the responsibility to pay and a culture of payment, but also realizing there are literally people with nothing and rates and taxes and paying for water is the very last thing on their mind because there are other responsibilities.
Yes, that's an excellent question. I think what has happened to date is that the policy response has pitted equity considerations against fiscal or financial considerations. And this is actually, I would say, is unimaginative as a policy response. We need to be thinking much more about how we can build a just city for all, and how do we think about equity and financial considerations alongside each other. Mm. And there are multiple responses that could be developed. How do we think about progressive block tariffs? So, for example, how do you charge high users more and cross-subsidize? And that has happened to an extent across South Africa, but we need to improve how that is done and not punish those that are really the most vulnerable in the ways in which we think about recovering costs and ensuring that the city has a balanced budget. Because currently that's where the focus has been placed. Mm. How do we combine managing usage alongside debt management? Mm. And those that are paying the, or at least feeling the impact of that most strongly, are the vulnerable members of our city.
Issues around meter readings and limiting devices is nothing new. It's definitely something that's not unique to the city of Cape Town. Around the country, other metros also have these same issues. In terms of a national approach, and water regulation is local government competency, where do we rank in terms of, as a national government, as a national strategy, you know, deal with this issue of cultures of payment, providing and paying and ensuring that bulk infrastructure is maintained, but also this very, very basic human right of the provision of water is upheld? Is this a case where lobby groups are going to have to get involved, possibly challenges to legislation, you know, meeting in the Constitutional Court for, again, to underline with red pen that the provision of water is a basic human right in this country, around the world?
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think this is not necessarily unique to Cape Town. In listening to Zanzia Limburg last week, I think she was at pains to emphasize that Cape Town's practices are consistent with what's happening across the country. But I don't think that's a sufficient justification for placing people on drip due to an inability to pay. So we need to really take the constitutional commitment and what the Constitution is about seriously. Our Constitution is unique in that we really take socioeconomic rights seriously. These are brought into our laws, and that effort should be, we need to recognize it's a response to a historical injustice and an effort to address that. Mm. And so municipalities should not be just thinking about the minimal ways in which they can meet their constitutional requirements, but ultimately are still essentially creating a crisis across the city for those who are unable to pay for access. So I do agree that we need to be lobbying around how we conceive of the right and how that is instrumentalized, including thinking about how municipalities can realize that within their financial constraints.
So Rhea, how has day zero and the worries over Cape Town running out of water a couple of years ago, how has that changed behavior? And also, I'd like your opinion on who was policed during that time. And there was, you know, water inspectors going around and checking if people are watering the garden when they're not supposed to. There were issues and I believe valid criticisms of, you know, clamping down of people within township areas whose businesses, whose means of incomes were car washers, and they were essentially criminalized and said they can't operate business. What did we learn as we approached day zero a couple of years ago?
Yes, I mean, I think that, you know, the question of day zero is a really interesting one. I think as a system we did learn, there was certainly positive that came out about how, as a collective, we thought about how to conserve water, the importance of conservation, but at the same time, the effect both prior to day zero and the way in which day zero was managed was not equally shared. Mm. So firstly, there was not enough of a consideration of who the high users were prior to day zero and how to respond to that. There was some use of water management devices then, consequently during day zero, for high users, but that was only for a period of time. And those that were then criminalized were absolutely not the high users. So if you look at the day zero response more carefully, which I have done with colleagues, what you begin to see is that the way in which the city responded to that crisis was firstly to remove the universal provision of free basic water. So what I mean by that is prior to day zero and the water crisis, everybody in the city had access to 6 kiloliters per household per month. That was universally provided. But in fact, that was removed during the crisis. And now only those who are registered as indigent have that access. And researchers have extensively documented that the indigent register is underrepresentative. Mm. What that means is that, in fact, the vulnerability is not reflected in the amount of people that are registered as indigent. There are a number of people who require access to that free basic water quantity, and they are unable to register because of a number of bureaucratic difficulties. Mm. So one way to interpret the management of day zero and the ways in which we moved out of that crisis was that in some ways it became more difficult for those in our city who actually faced a sustained crisis. Mm. And I think what is concerning about this revised approach to domestic metering is that we are potentially moving into a further intensification of the struggle for those who are already struggling. Mm. So, and that should absolutely be contested and not normalized.
Dr. Soraya Sheba, she's a lecturer in the Department of Environmental and Geographical Sciences at UCT. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Morning Review.